Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
See Red Fred at his estate in Bartlett, Illinois, joins us now. SRF, what's up, Sparky?
Oh, I love you, Cap. You're a Chicago icon. Your whole team there are difference makers. I love the show.
Thank you. Fantastic job. You're the man.
No doubt, Zach disappointed us at the end last night. But let's not lose perspective here. He had 28 points, 7 assists, 8 boards. In general, when Zach attacks the basket, it's good. When he settles for jumpers, it's bad. But I think he was tired because he's expending a ton of energy covering for our terrible bench. Payne was a minus 14 in 8 minutes. Lopez was a minus 13. But the good news is these guys won't be playing when Dunn comes back and when Portis comes back. So,
who do you think Dunn is? This is not CP3 coming back now.
No, not Dunn. No, Dunn's a fantastic defender. He's one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. He's not a great offensive player, but he's probably top 3 defensive point guard in the league.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And we need that for our perimeter defense. I want to say one thing about Parker. Parker has irritated some fans with occasional lapses on defense, but he scored 20-plus in 4 of the last 6. And he had 18-10 last night. He's playing well. Holiday's playing well. When Morey comes back next week, Cap, and Portis and Dunn shortly thereafter, and you got Parker and Portis on the second unit, and Ryan goes to the second unit, I'm telling you, this team's a budding Leviathan. You got to stay on the bus. The 8 seed's the Magic. They're 10-11. We're better than them. Right? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
You don't believe me? Hey, I didn't mean Dunn. I meant Payne. Payne's awful. But Dunn is a good player. Well, why don't you believe in Dunn?
He's okay.
I don't get it.
I'm not against Dunn. He's okay. Is Dunn a starting guard on a team that thinks they can get to the Eastern Conference Final?
Yes.
No.
Here's why. He's right next to. He's playing next to Levine. And when you play next to Levine, you need a guard, a point guard that can stop twos and threes in the league. He's a versatile defender, and you know he would have been top 5 in the league last year in steals. If he would have played 6 more games, he didn't qualify. He's one of the best defenders in basketball. He's all NBA defensive potential. I'm telling you, the mesh is going to be perfect when these guys come back. Cap, you got to believe in this team.
I'm not.
I sense you're getting off the bus.
I'm just telling you, this team is a long way from being a Leviathan, as you put it.
Do you believe that Laurie's a top 10 player? Has top 10 potential? Do you believe that?
Top 10 in the NBA?
Yes.
Not right now, no.
And of course not now, but do you see it coming? Do you foresee it coming? He looks like Lou Ferrigno. Have you seen him lately? He put on 25 pounds of muscle. The guy's a monster.
Top 10 in the NBA? No, I don't.
Yes,
and you know,
I
was one of the biggest proponents of drafting him. I love him as a player. Top 10? No.
I'm telling you, we already have a championship core here in Lauri Markkanen, Levine, and Wendell Carter Jr. Those three can be the core of a title team. You heard it from me first. Remember what I say in 2021 when we hoist up the 7th title. I can't wait. I'm telling you, get on board here.
You're
everybody. Hey, everybody. Danny, let me hear you, Danny.
Hey!
Hey! What about Chris? Chris, come on, bring it on. Here we go. Hey, you got it?
Yeah.
It's going to happen. I'm telling you.
All right, telling you. Freddie,
have a good one, guys.
Have a good day.
I love you.
Love you. See you. Love his optimism. Don't agree with his analysis.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Franz on the line. Keith, how you doing, brother?
Living the dream, man. Living the dream.
So the beloved Bulls, I'm suddenly on a pretty optimistic road here. And believe it or not, I'm looking at the bright side. Believe it or not, I really have kind of changed my tune on this team in the last 2 weeks. I'd say seeing how competitive these guys have been with major issues to rotation players. Obviously, Valentine's out for the year, but we had Chandler Hutchinson out with some back spasms, and they're still, for the most part, being competitive against some very good teams. And it just hit me. The big problem with this team right now, the second quarters have been awful. Some of the historically worst second quarters in the history of the league. That has everything to do with the bench. And when you are bringing guys back, and you're taking guys like Payne out of the rotation and Lopez, who's been awful this season, out of the rotation, this team's going to be significantly, significantly better. What say you?
I don't think you can really dispute that. You know, obviously, inserting better players into your starting lineup takes the players that are now starting, like Archie, possibly Holiday, and that adds them to your bench, which obviously adds depth to the team, which, like you pointed out, our biggest issue has been second quarters when Levine goes out and Jabari goes out and you can't have one of them on the floor. Everything just kind of falls apart.
Well, to me, the biggest, I noticed it especially in the Heat game. That's a game I think we win by double digits if we had, let's say, Portis healthy, or, you know, I mean, especially Portis, because in the second quarter, or Markkanen, in that second quarter, Whiteside just took over the game because we had nobody to be a threat from the outside to pull him out of the paint. He just was able to roam freely and affect every shot within 10 to 15 feet. No fear of retribution whatsoever. That was the turning point of that game. And we almost made a great comeback to win that game. But, you know, just having Laurie on the floor and pulling him away from the basket would have done wonders for the team. The infusion of talent with what we're talking about with Markkanen, Portis, and Dunn is just so large and the delta is so big. I just don't see how this is a cry all the tankaholics want. There's no way we're going to tank. There's just no way.
Yeah, I don't know, Fred. You got to think teams play down to their competition. Any night the Bulls walk into their own stadium or an opposing team stadium, depleted how they are, teams are taking them lightly to begin with and then, you know, generally turning it up in the second half. So I think we're going to see a lot more competitive basketball. We're going to see a lot more fun basketball to watch, but that is not going to change the fact how young this team is and the fact that they really don't have any veterans that know how to stable the ship at the end of the game and close.
The Hornets are 10-10 as the 7th seed. The Magic are 10-11 as the 8th seed. The East is a tire fire. I know there's a lot of people clamoring for us to get one of the three Duke guys. I'm here to tell you guys, everyone, I just realized that there's no way we're tanking. The team's just going to be too good. I don't understand how it would work. Like, what do you want us to do? Sit out Dunn? Sit out Markkanen? Sit out all these guys that are key core pieces that need to work together and play together and develop that, you know, relationship on the court? It's like insane to me that we're calling for this. I agree. Like, if we're still on a downward trajectory when these guys come back, which I don't expect, but if it does happen, you know, I expect Fred to be fired within 30 days. And then, yeah, I'm fine for, hey, let's just sit guys for whatever reason, but in order to get as high of a pick as we can. But there's just no way. It's not going to happen. Just Ryan Arcinato being the leader of the second unit. Having Portis or having Parker on that second unit, I mean, imagine how much better that unit's going to be with these guys?
My only counter to that be, and I fully agree with you in the sense that the Bulls should not be resting players that need development this year. I don't care about the tank, especially with the new lottery system. You could finish in the bottom four and still end up picking eighth. So the odds are increased further back, which I think plays right into the Bulls' hands. We could be like 5-22 by the time Lowry gets back, Fred. Our schedule the next 8 games isn't very easy. Obviously, Lowry's still going to be out for the next 3, and then the first 3 that once he gets back for are Indy, OKC, and I believe...
Yeah, why don't you pull up that schedule while we go into... I do want to say one thing. Payne was a minus 14 in 8 minutes yesterday, and Lopez was a minus 13 in 20-some minutes. If you watched that game yesterday, you know, those two guys were huge reasons why we lost that game. You know, I felt. San Antonio, as soon as Lopez came in, he was beaten twice. Once on a pick and roll where I can't remember who the guard was who blew by him, and then the next time with Aldridge just embarrassed him. It was one of the fastest and most ridiculous beats I've seen on by a big this year. I mean, he just blew by him. It happened so quickly, the backside help couldn't get there even remotely in enough time. And, you know, when that guy's on the bench, he's just been terrible this year. And you're replacing him with Portis or Parker, and you got options to play, you know, Markkanen at the 5 a little bit. It's just going to be so much better. It really is. I don't think there's any way we lose last night.
Like I said, you're playing down to the competition if you're the opposing team. That's how it always works. So when they bulls are healthy and they're coming in, teams aren't going to take them as a joke. They know that the talent is there. I don't expect the team to tank, but our schedule before we get Lowry back isn't very easy. Once we get Lowry back, it's not very easy either.
Well, let's go through it. Let's go through it. So our next game, obviously the Bucks tomorrow.
We are in Milwaukee.
That's probably a loss.
And then we are in Detroit.
Pistons, probably a loss. What's the next game after that?
In Houston for the Rockets.
All right. That's another loss. Six in a row.
In Indy against the Pacers, who have been rocking without Oladipo healthy. So they should probably have him back by then, which kind of makes that a difficult game.
Yeah. That's a team I think we could potentially beat. We gave them a lot of good games last year. But you're right, probably a loss, seven in a row. Let's go on.
Now we have OKC coming to the United Center.
Possible win, not likely, go on. All right, this is changing.
Boston coming to the United Center.
The 500 team, basically. I think they're one game over. I think we could beat them, but...
Like we saw last time.
They'll be favored.
This is a tune-up, Fred.
Boston will be favored, no doubt. Let's go, Zeds, eight in a row. Let's go.
And then we have the Kings coming in, and that's our first... Light winnable game, when they come to the UC.
Okay, so assuming a nightmare scenario, what we lose nine in a row, what's our record then?
We would be 5-24, 19 games under 500.
5-24.
With 2/3 of the season remaining.
Okay. Now, from that point, we'll probably have all the guys back. Like, I think it's entirely possible we could win 8 out of 10. I got to look at the schedule again, but I remember looking at the schedule saying in January...
Once we get to the Kings, then we go Magic, which is a winnable game, even though the Kings and the Magic are both playing fairly well. And then we go at Spurs and Thunder.
Kings,
but
yeah.
After that, we get Nets, Magic, Cavs, Wolves, Wizards, Raptors, Magic, Pacers, Nets. So there's more than, you know, half of those games are winnable once we get past this tough block, and we'll be healthy by then. So things could turn there, but it could be quite a bit too late.
Yes, agreed. If we're not going to win, if we're going to be 5-19, we don't pull out a couple of these games that you just described, and you know, no doubt we're going to be the underdog in all these games. If we can't win two of those, I think it's unlikely for us to. Man, you just soured my whole.
No, I'm sorry, Fred. I'm just trying to be realistic with you here. Once we get to the 1/3 point, I've been doing the math. Obviously, the Bulls had a 7-game win streak last year, and they won 10 out of 12, including that win streak in that block, once we got healthy, which is a similar situation to this year. We're going to get Markkanen back, which you could argue will have a greater or the same impact as getting a Nico back. We're getting Bobby back like we got last year. Chris Dunn was coming back off an injury, and he did not start immediately after his return. So a lot of things are going fairly similar as it comes to return, and we could get a big burst, but we could also just be too far in the hole again and still kind of struggle to win 30 games.
No doubt. So let's say they're at the 30-game point, they're 6-24, all right, which I think is doable. I think the team could be at least 500. I think they'll actually play a little bit above 500, just a bit above 500 to finish the season. But even with 6-24, that would put them at 36-50.
You'll have 44. 52 games left. Winning half of those would be 26. So 26 plus 6, that would be a 32-win season.
Yeah, that's not going to make it, even in the week. Like, I think 37, 38 wins could be an eighth seed in the East this year. That's how bad I think the conference is.
Which is crazy, because there's going to be teams in the West that are at 500 or above 500 that miss the playoffs again, which favors the Bulls when it comes to the lottery system, because it doesn't matter your seeding at that point. It means your record. So the teams that are seeded, you know, 9 through 11 in the West, they're going to be above 500 teams. If you're in the East, you're almost guaranteed a top 10 slot in the lottery.
Yeah. I mean, right now, looking at these teams, like the teams between the Bulls and the 8th seed, the 8th seed is the Magic. I think the Bulls are a better team when healthy than the Magic. The Wizards, I mean, they're up and down. They're starting to play a little bit better now. They're 8-12. They still got a long way to go. The Nets, I think the Bulls are a better team, especially with the injury situation now for the Nets. The Heat, I don't think the Heat are very good. The Knicks. those teams are between the Bulls and the eighth seed. You know, I feel probably they're more talented than every team but the Wizards when healthy. But, you know, there's a lot of teams to climb over there, no doubt about it. They're still, was it five games? They're five games out of the eighth spot. Yeah, just they got to win two or three in these next stretch.
I feel like I just, like, took out both of your kneecaps with a baseball bat. You're just sitting there.
You're like a tire iron. You just took out both my... I get, you're right. We're probably in the lottery. I guess that's a good thing.
Which I want to give you the positive spin on that. And like I said, I don't want the team to tank. I want them to push as hard as they can. You do not want to take the pride away from this core that is coming together. You want them to finish strong. And if they can finish the season with the mentality of, well, you know, if we didn't get hit with those four injuries in the first 20 games, we're a playoff team. And you ride that momentum into the next season, and you still get to go into the lottery with increased odds, and you get a chance at getting lucky. So I think... once again, this time next year, we're going to be upset that we weren't a playoff team, but we'll also kind of rejoice in the fact that it might have been the best-case scenario.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now that I think I reflect on it. I mean, to me, it's everything's a best-case scenario. If we really start playing above our heads, the worst-case scenario is we finish ninth or 10th, right? If we start playing above our heads, we get in the playoffs, I'm fine with that because that means that this team is much better than anyone of us expected. They're playing at a very high rate, a very high winning percentage, you know, from January on. So that's a good thing. And I do feel that the team, as currently constituted, has the pieces to win a title in Markkanen, LaVine, and Wendell Carter Jr. I'm much higher on probably Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen than most people are. Especially Lauri. I think Lauri can be top 10 player in the league. But, you know, that's what you got to ask yourself. You know, do you feel that they could win it with just those three? If not, I mean, it never hurts to add talent, right? But, man, you really...
I won't go as far as you to say I think that we have a title team yet. I will say that they have the blueprint to get to being a... finals team, because we will have, you know, seven or eight good assets locked in. Most of our roster is going to turn over next year. We're going to have probably six new players on this team, maybe a little less, but somewhere around there. We have a lot of expirings, so there's going to be a lot of turnover next year, but we have the cap flexibility. We're going to have the young studs on rookie contracts that allow you to spend in that window, and we're definitely moving in the right direction.
So when Lauri comes back, let's talk about that. He's coming back next week. I can't wait. Can't be here soon enough. And I think he's just going to be awesome. I'm really excited about a few things. Hopefully Fred's creative enough to put him at the five. I thought he put on a ton of muscle that he can play at the five in today's NBA and just destroy teams at that position with his speed and versatility and his ability to tack the rim. I don't think there's a lot of centers in the league that can keep up with him in his quickness, but he's strong enough to play that position. We'll see what happens there. And then you can get away, obviously, putting Parker or Portis at the four, hopefully, against the right matchups. But what do you think is going to happen? I noticed you've had a hard time admitting how good Parker's been playing lately. He's been just stellar lately. Again, an 18-10 yesterday, 18 points, 10 rebounds. He's been pretty efficient recently. He had his best game of the year against the Suns in a victory. I thought he was fantastic last night against the Spurs. Just showing everything that I wanted to see with him, and I wish it was a little bit earlier, but the last 2 weeks, he's been rock solid. So what do you think is going to happen? Holiday obviously playing out of his mind. Even I will admit I am going to issue a formal public apology to him with how good he's played and shot from three-point line. He's shooting over 40%, so you can't question him there. I mean, he's playing so well right now. I think that the move will be that Holiday will remain as the starting three. Markkanen will step in as the four, and then they'll bring Parker off the bench to lead that unit. What say you?
Well, the good news for you is you can probably include your apology to Justin Holiday in his farewell letter as he gets traded out of here in the near future, which should open up that spot. I do think you have to start Jabari at the small forward, at least initially, moving him to the bench without giving him the opportunity first, I feel will cause some tension, some problems. You brought the guy in. You paid him what you paid him, even though it's a situational figure. to play the small forward position. If you don't give him the opportunity to do so once Lowry gets back, I think we could have some internal conflicts going on there that we'd like to avoid. So give him the opportunity. Obviously, if it doesn't work out and we need to spread out our ball usage and move him to the back unit, then you do that. But I think you have to at least give him the opportunity initially.
Oh, that's interesting to hear you say that. I agree, too. I think that would be the best move. I just don't see him pulling Holiday out of the lineup. I think he's going to just put him back. Fred has stated he loved Parker leading that second unit. I think Parker's best asset is transition offense, and he's been a much better passer than I expected. I think he's really flourished in the last few weeks with some incredible passes that often, you know, unfortunately haven't realized in points due to our just horrible offense overall outside of himself and LaVine and Holiday to a certain extent. But I think he's going to make that move. I'd be shocked, absolutely shocked, if he puts Parker in at the three.
And I agree. I think long-term, that is Jabari's best fit on this team, is either, you know, a burst scorer at four or five off of the bench with that second unit, which kind of allows us not to have those dead zones in the second quarter. But because he has been playing so well, and obviously Justin Holiday's production makes it more difficult to, you know, sit him as well, but I think Holiday has less of an ego. He understands what his role with this team is, and if he's asked to sit, he'll take it, you know, without any issues. As for Jabari, he's just came into himself. He's now fitting in with the team, and now Lowry's going to come back, and we're going to reset that chemistry, which is also another thing that could lead to some losses, and we're going to struggle a little bit when we even bring back the better talent because they're not used to playing that way. So there's a lot of things coming that could get a little interesting.
Man, I know how much that you had a struggle saying that he's played well.
Oh, no.
Parker. I want to get into a little bit marketing at the five. So, you know, you got Portis who can play the four. I think Portis is more of a modern day five. I'd like to see him play at the five more often, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. I do want to talk about, I do envision Fred trying Parker at the four and Markkanen at the five. Despite all of Gustavo's videos of, you know, Parker mistakes at the four, he has definitely played better defensively recently. Definitely. And
well, you're always going to play better once you try, Fred.
Well, yes, and also once you get used to your team, your teammates, and what your role is, and he has put forth better effort. I will admit that. Also, I think clearly someone got to him. That said, I think he's not bad at the four defensively in moments. And do you envision Markkanen spending a lot of time at the five?
Just because we have Wendell, I don't think so. I mean, I can see Fred going to Jabari and Lowry in a situation where we need a lot of points quick. But at the same time, because of Wendell being as versatile as he is and how crap our defense is, I think you got to keep the Lowry-Wendell combo out there as much as possible and thinking for the future. That's the duo that you want to see out there. That's the duo you want to see get chemistry. So I think you have to roll with that more times than not.
No doubt. Agree with you there. But unfortunately, Wendell's had the foul trouble issue, which I'm sure will not alleviate itself anytime soon. So do you foresee the first move when Wendell gets in foul trouble? What do you think Fred goes to first? Is it still going to be Lopez off the bench, or do you think he will try to have Laurie step to the five and bring in Parker in off the four at the four?
Well, you could always bring Portis in too. I do think that Portis and Jabari will kind of eliminate Rolo's minutes in the long term here. We don't need five big men in the rotation. If you have Jabari, Portis, Lowry, and Wendell, you know, you have four above average players that can pretty much all play the four or the five, and you can just exchange them however, you know, you see fit on that night.
Agree 100%, but until Portis comes back. Let's assume Portis doesn't come back till mid-December. I know people are saying it's going to be a week for him and Dunn to come back, you know, shortly thereafter. But in that time period, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Fred plays it. You know, like, what's he going to do when Wendell picks up two quick fouls? You know, is Laurie going to step over the five, or is it going to be Lopez off the bench?
And out of those two options, I think Lowry stepping over probably makes sense. We were playing Felicio over Rolo at points this season, so I think that kind of says where Fred feels Rolo is at this point of his career.
Great. So let's get into this. We're going to have two power forwards behind Markkanen. Parker was playing much better scoring 20 plus in four out of his last six, four double doubles. He's playing much better. I think there's going to be teams interested in his scoring, and his contract, although hefty, is expiring. And Portis, who's also a good young player at the four or five, who can score for you. I think probably not as talented as Parker offensively, but good leader, good hard worker, good rebounder. Not a lot of quickness or athletic ability, but you know, definitely a guy I think teams would be interested in. So you got two fours that are marketable and trade pieces. Let's go over some of the teams that you think could potentially be interested in the services of Portis or Parker.
First and foremost, I think I'd go with the Sixers. Obviously, they just traded Dario Saric, so they have kind of a hole there, and I think Parker could play the Saric role with much greater scoring, and I don't think their defensive ability changes very much if you throw Parker in there. Obviously, adding him to all those egos could be a problem. Outside of that, there's not a lot of teams. Portis, I think, will be easier to move just because you have to find, you know, a hefty contract that's hopefully expiring to exchange Jabari with somebody, because you don't want to take cap on for next year. That kind of ruins the whole flexibility plan and the point of giving Jabari the team option next year instead of, you know, locking him in more long term. So I do agree with you. I think the Bulls are going to essentially have to choose between Portis or Jabari, and it might come down to which one has more market value.
Well, like, I was thinking, though, more along the lines of your Fultz, who I don't want a part of the guy. I just think it's a complete mess. I don't see him ever becoming an even average NBA player. I think he's, you know, Payne, a taller, more athletic version of Payne. He's just drafted at the number one overall spot, you know, so without Payne's shooting ability. It's just a complete disaster. But let's say, hypothetically, they were interested in that. He doesn't have a small number on the cap. You can combine a few salaries. You know, that's a guy that could easily, you could trade for Portis or add a few other guys and trade him for Parker.
Now, the Philly does have Wilson Chandler, who's kind of like a 3-4 hybrid who they acquired this year through a trade, but his contract is expiring. Something to note, Parker cannot be traded until December 15th.
That's though. Right. Yep.
So I agree, that's something to look into. I think Fultz gets moved before then, and I know a lot of people are against it. He's not somebody that I'd want to move Portis for, or particularly, I mean, I guess if you included, if you got him for Parker, that would be all right. But he's more somebody I'm looking to send Holiday, Cameron Payne, just as cap filler to get him out of here, and maybe a second if the Bulls wanted to go that route. And I do think that's a risk you take in a season like this. We're probably not going to make the playoffs. You could give him the year off to get his mind and his body right, see whatever specialist he has to see to convince himself that his body is 100%, and then you let Fred work with him off the court for the remainder of the year, and you prepare him for next year. So I think that's something the Bulls should look into. He was a number one pick for a reason. He wasn't a pick that I was fond of at the time, and I agree with you. It's very possible that he will never be a good player. But if you're trading Holiday, Cameron Payne, a future second, and then you have to eat his $9 million next year, I think that's a gamble worth the risk.
What other teams are looking for a power forward outside the Sixers? And I agree, that's a likely destination for one of those two guys. I mean, there's a trade there if the Bulls want to make it.
I thought Oklahoma City, maybe. They have Patrick Patterson and Jeremy Grant splitting time at the four there, so they could potentially be looking for an upgrade. Maybe a team like Portland. They have Aminu, but outside of that, I mean, Zach Collins as well. But there's definitely potential for upgrades on these teams, and teams like Portland do have some contracts like Harkless or Myers Leonard that are just pretty crap contracts. Yeah. That you could, you know, leverage that to get something valuable for Jabari as well.
Anyone else that you wanted to mention? What about the Heat? That's a team I keep on hearing some people throw out there. But I mean, obviously, I don't know if I want to do too many deals with some of the teams that are kind of strapped in our conference like them. I mean, their situation is so bad. They're going to be mired in just, you know, average at best for the next 6 years.
No, and that's kind of the problem that it comes to trading Jabari. Obviously, you're going to be looking at a bigger contract, most of them which aren't expiring, so why would you want to help out a conference competitor like the Heat get out of their cap hell? I agree with you there. I don't think that's something I'd look into, but Kelly Olynyk is arguably their best power forward, so maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Definitely interesting to see. Let's wrap this up with one question and general NBA question on the Celtics. They're 11-10. I don't know if you spent a lot of time watching this team. What is going on there? Why are they having such issues? And do you foresee them turning this around, or is that team going to, you know, be a disappointment? Do you see them coming out of the East still getting this together with all the talent they have, or are they a victim of what kind of happened to the Bulls of 2011? 2012 of, you know, injuries to key players, and when they returned, they just weren't at the level that they were before?
I think there's a good amount of that going on with Hayward, and I think a lot of their problems come from, you know, trying to be patient and trying to work Hayward back into what he used to be. The rest of the team is suffering because of that, and who knows when it's going to turn around. I do think it is going to turn around. You have one of the best coaches in the league there. They have talent out the wazoo, at least for this year. Going forward should be interesting with their cap situation, their draft picks kind of souring in their lap and not being able to pay who they want to pay. I keep seeing people suggest they trade for Anthony Davis, which they are not allowed to do currently after with Kyrie Irving under his current contract, because he was signed under the Rose Rule, and you're only allowed to have one player under the Rose Rule on your team or acquire them via trade. So they can't even trade for Anthony Davis right now.
Really? Until
next year when Kyrie resigns a different contract.
I got you. That's interesting. I wasn't aware of that. So there's no use even talking about it now unless could they trade Irving in that deal?
I believe they can move Irving in that deal, or they can move him prior to that deal in order to, you know, work around it. But as long as Kyrie Irving is on their roster, they cannot trade for.
I would be so wary of signing Irving to a long-term deal. I mean, I know he's a fantastic player. He's had a significant injury history. I just don't see that guy. He's not a defensive player at all. He's horrible defensively for the most part. That guy aging, I do not see it ending well, you know. I could be wrong on that, but it's interesting to see what will happen with that team. I would not be surprised if he signs elsewhere, even despite his promise before the season. Do you agree with that?
I could agree with that. You have Terry Rozier and Kyrie Irving that are both going to be free agents. Terry Rozier is going to be a restricted free agent if they don't move him by the deadline. You could probably get him a better contract. He obviously has less injuries. He showed you what he could do in the playoffs, and he's more of a two-way guard. And we know how much Ainge loves Rozier with his reluctance to trade him in a Butler deal before, you know, the year that we were looking to move Butler in those talks. So Boston's got a lot of good problems, but they are still problems nonetheless.
Keith, it's always good to talk to you, even today, despite tampering some of my expectations and optimism. I still believe in this team long term. I'm not going to let you bring me down. I'm still excited about the team going forward. And although you did a great case and making a great case that the next 2 weeks will be unpleasant, I see a brighter future starting in 2019.
Hey, I'm with you. I don't think the light at the end of the tunnel is a train. I do think it is a Bulls paradise in the future, but we got a few hurdles to get over here this year before we can start moving forward.
Right now it's a tunnel at the end of the light, but we'll see what happens. Hopefully things, when we finally get out that other end, things will be good. All right, brother. Always good talking to you, my man.
Sounds good, boss. Talk to you next week.
Have a good one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.